welcome to Empowering Homeschool Conversations. My name is Peggy Plourd. I'm the host of this weekly broadcast put on by Sped Homeschool, as well as the founder and CEO of Sped Homeschool. We at Sped Homeschool empower families to home educate children with learning challenges, and I encourage you to check out our website at spedhomeschool.com to learn more about the resources and support we offer families. Some of the best resources we have on our website are the services offered by our partners who help fund our work, like Bookshark, who is sponsoring this broadcast. You'll hear more about the products that they offer families of struggling learners about halfway through our show. But if you're interested in checking them out ahead of time, you can just head over to bookshark.com. Each month, our broadcast and blogs focus on a central topic, and this month we're focusing on homeschooling at your child's pace, and maybe a little bit at your own pace too. And specifically tonight, we're talking about creating a unique homeschool learning oasis with some very, very special guests. And I usually say I have very special guests, but tonight I have really special guests because these ladies are my best buds. I love, love, love them. And I can't wait for you to meet them again because they've been on this show before, but they work behind the scenes a lot with Sped Homeschool. And I always tell people, these are the teachers that you need to talk to because I'm an encourager, but definitely not a teacher. So tonight we have Amy Vickery and Don Spence with us, and I'm going to have them share at the kind of as we get started a little bit of their homeschooling background so you can get to know them and your professional background too, ladies. But Don's been working with me since before Sped Homeschool was started. We actually worked at the Texas Homeschool Coalition together, and then Amy's been working with Sped Homeschool almost since the very beginning, haven't you?
Yeah.
And and Sped Homeschool has been around since 2017, if you didn't know that. We actually are over 4 years old now. It's amazing. but we just love what we do, and we love encouraging you as parents. And tonight, I really think you're going to get a lot out of this broadcast because we're going to talk about an oasis. And as we were looking up that word, It really plays into just as a homeschool family with a struggling child, what we need to create in our homes. So super, super excited. So who wants to get started in introducing yourself? You guys going to fight over it?
You go first, Amy.
All right. So I started teaching 19 years ago. And I started teaching early childhood and just kind of worked my way through and went into special ed. And along the way, just kind of stopped working in the public schools and went more private and started homeschooling my kids about 5 years ago. Along the way, I've picked up some extra degrees, a couple of masters in curriculum instruction and also special education. Yeah. And so now the last 4 years, on top of homeschooling my children who are currently 10 and 5, and the last 4 years tutoring online, doing classes and tutoring online, I now also do educational testing for learning disabilities. And so I get the opportunity now to work in person with families here locally where I am in South Central Texas. And so that's been a really exciting opportunity to get hands-on with families as well as, you know, working with families around the United States and even in Puerto Rico and other places over the last 5 years. So that's been fun. I work with, you know, my youngest is kindergarten this year all the way through. I've got a senior this year that I'm working with online virtually, and I've graduated 2 kiddos out of my program. As homeschoolers. So it's really exciting. And awesome. Have been with Sped Homeschool, like Peggy said, since the beginning. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me to grow and learn and reach out to other families and connect with other families. And it's been my home base all this time.
Well, we love that. So thanks, Amy. Okay, Don, it's your turn.
Okay. I taught public school for about 10 years and had my son, and he was about 1, and found out we were pregnant with twin daughters. And so we knew our family was going to change. And we didn't realize how much it was going to change that when our daughters were born, they went to NICU and had some special things. And so going back to work for me was not an option. So I got to be home with my kids and kind of just doing the thing that, you know, moms like to do. We teach our kids lots of things, how to brush their teeth and do just the normal everyday things. And so when it came time for my kids to do formal education, which I say formal because we educate from the time they're born, my son went to public school for a couple of years and didn't have a good experience. And so we pulled him back out. And so I've been homeschooling my kids for 9 years. So that's a lot of 10 plus 9 years, 19 years about. I first went to school and got my teaching certificate just in regular ed. And then I felt this draw to get special ed. And then I taught in the special ed PPCD program. And then I taught in the ABLE program where I taught mostly kids with autism. And then that's when I came home with my daughters, and I have two daughters, and one has special needs and learning disabilities, and my other one has some learning differences that she's really great. But so through them, and then, you know, just learning how to take what all the life lessons and what I've taught in the past, I could take it and use it with my kids. And then I have helped other people just set up things in their home, how to accommodate, how to read an IEP, and then use that in their home when they switch over to homeschooling. I remember Peggy coming to, I think this was the year before I started working with you, coming to the THSE booth, and you have these couches set up, and I came in and I was just crying. I'm like, I don't think I could do this. And you're, you know, and it's so funny how, like, you were very empowering and encouraging. And now here we are these many years later, and just like where my daughter has blossomed and what she's doing. And so you never know where life's going to lead you.
So true. Yes. I do remember that when we met, and Dawn just, she was going to give up, and I'm like, no, you can't. You can do it. So yes, I am the encourager here. And these ladies have so much wisdom and teaching to share. And so, yes. So they're going to share a bit tonight, but I'm also going to share with you as we go through this broadcast, how you can connect with them on a regular basis and dive in to help with the mentoring help that they provide, as well as an online webinar that they take all your questions and they answer them, kind of like a group coaching session they do once a month as well. So just something to dive into if you feel like you need some extra help or you're struggling. These ladies they know what they're talking about. As you've heard, they have experience in the home homeschooling with special needs learners, as well as just years of training as well. So take advantage of that. So yeah, well, thanks ladies for that introduction and for letting everybody kind of get to know who you are. So tonight we're going to talk about creating a unique homeschool oasis. And I want to read what an oasis, the definition of an oasis is, because it really points to what as parents, when we have struggling learners, why it's so important we create this environment. And so here's the definition. It says, a small area in a desert that has a supply of water and is able to support vegetation. An oasis forms when groundwater lies close enough to the surface to form a spring or to be reached by wells. And I thought, how perfect is that? That we are our kids that struggle. It's almost like they're in this desert of learning, that they can't get what they need. And to be able to form that place where they are watered and where growth can happen. But again, it happens uniquely for every homeschooling family. And so we're going to talk about some different avenues. I'm going to just throw these out to these ladies, these different things, and have them respond with some different ways that your homeschool might embrace a unique perspective or take that'll fit you as a teacher as well as your student as a learner. So you ready to dive in?
Sure.
Okay. And I also want our viewers to know that if you're watching us with us live, and I see we have some of you on, feel free to just pop in with your own questions and comments. And we love to incorporate that in our discussion. So I think the first thing is this haven of acceptance. A lot of our kids are really down on themselves, or maybe we as parents are really down on ourselves. How are some ways that we can create an oasis of acceptance within our homeschool environment?
So one of the things I encourage parents to do is to kind of create, kind of backtrack a little bit and create an environment where your child starts feeling success at the beginning, you know, just kind of going with that little bit lower level, starting with them where they're comfortable, where they're independent, and then start moving forward, because then they have that momentum of, hey, I'm successful. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling, it creates that positive learning environment that you can then start working on that love of learning, incorporating interest, incorporating things that your child is really interested in, and just building from there, because it's just such a wonderful, wonderful way of just getting them to that next level, getting them to that ability to take those chances and put themselves out there. And because a lot of times our kids are afraid to be wrong because they've been told that they're wrong so many times. And so by starting at where they're independently learning and starting to build forward, then, you know, they kind of gain that confidence of, oh, I can do this. I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong all the time. I know some things.
Right. So you're like feeding, you're watering what's already growing, and you're getting those shoots that have started to go further versus trying to water things that are really struggling, which I know we do, but like over fertilizing and watering those things that are really growing just so that the child can see, hey, look at this. I can learn. And so that's great advice, Amy. I love that. You got anything to add to that, Dawn?
Another definition that I looked up when I was looking at Oasis today is a place of safety or sanctuary. And going off kind of what Amy had said, I remember doing this in the public school classroom with my kids with autism, and then with my daughter. It's called errorless learning, where you give them no opportunities to be wrong for a while, to re-encourage them. Like if it's spelling their name, you make it like, you know, letter to letter. So there's no way that they can do anything wrong in the beginning to gain that confidence if they've had a hard time and not realizing, you know, sometimes the kids want to give up because everything's too hard. And if it's too hard, then you're going to might have behaviors. So if you make it so errorless that they just look at it and go, oh, wait, I can do this. And then start changing the activity and making it less airless and giving them more opportunities to learn. I have found that that works great. And like mimicking and having, you know, if you're going to do something new, do it with them first. You know,
right.
And even show them where you make mistakes. I mean, I have dyscalculia, so my math skills have come a long way, but I'm teaching my son algebra, and I can tell you, I'm like, wait, what? And I'm like getting the book out, and I might make mistakes. And so letting your kids see that you make mistakes is a valuable tool too, because then that's a safety place, because you make mistakes, we all make mistakes.
Right. But it's a place where those mistakes are not going to be, you know, pounced on and pointed out, and we just kind of roll through them together, and that's just the way it is. So those are some great ideas. I know Lisa is joining us, and she said, "Hello, ladies, jumping in. Love this channel." And Creative Minds Homeschooling says, "Amy has given me wonderful advice." So I know she is on your guys' mentoring group. So that's awesome. And so yeah, we're talking about creating a unique homeschool learning oasis. And one thing I wanted to talk about was, comparisons, because comparisons can even happen in our home. And I know you have a very unique situation, Dawn, with having twin girls and them having very different learning struggles. And how do you work so that they aren't comparing themselves to each other? And Amy, you may be able to share some insight on this, even with your own boys or the students that you tutor that you may have gone through this. So I'd love your insight on how you help create this environment of acceptance when they see they're different.
Right. And I think that's the part where sometimes it's hard when they start noticing and they start verbalizing, well, why can't I be like, so, you know, like my mm-hmm. sister. Yeah, because you're twins, are very fraternal, but at the same point, they want to just, to have their thing. One thing that I've done since the very beginning is I do group work with my kids. We do Bible and science and social studies and all that, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have from the very beginning differentiated their learning. So whatever my son is doing as a ninth grader, maybe doing different than what his sister is and even my other daughter. And I've just made that part of our everyday. Mm-hmm. So if we're doing geography, Becca's going to do geography. She's just going to do it differently. And my other two are going to do it differently. And so it's like, this is just our work. And we just make it very normal. And you don't even have to really, call it out. But I think when they understand and they can accept each other, that's going to build acceptance from other people. Because then they like, okay, well, I'm different and that's okay. And that's the beauty of homeschooling is that you don't always know what your peers do, because even when we go to co-op, everybody is learning at their own pace.
Right.
So just developing that thing that I don't really call attention to it as much anymore. I remember in the beginning, I wanted my girls to do calendar time because they were in pre-K and blah, blah, blah. And Elizabeth was having a great time with it. And Becca was screaming her head off. And I'm like, why am I doing this? I'm like, just take Lizzie over here, do her little thing, and let Becca do her thing, and that's a-okay, because it's like, if you try to force something that's not natural and that's not working,
right,
that's why you want to give up. And so just don't make it harder, just work smarter and try to figure out what each kid needs, and that does help.
That's a great perspective. Yeah. Because we as moms can do the same thing too. It isn't just the kids that do it.
Right.
We get kind of sucked into that whole process. It's this mentality that's in our society that just says we need to compare and we have to fight against that. So thanks for bringing that up too. So what do you have, Amy?
So one of the things that's been fun is my kids are 5 years apart, but because my oldest has some struggles and some difficulties, he learns in a different way than my youngest does. And sometimes it's my youngest teaching my oldest the skill. And in our family, that's acceptable because we talk about that we all have strengths and weaknesses that are different. And we complement each other and we work together. Mm-hmm. And so, it was my youngest started whistling first and he taught my oldest to whistle. And there's been several things like that that have happened that it's just been like, just little things. And, we talk about that everybody has their own strengths and weaknesses and that's okay. Yeah. There's not everyone's going to be good at everything. And,
I love that. So, we had a viewer ask a question kind of back to what you guys were talking about before on, the topic of, helping them be super successful at the very beginning. But Lisa asked, she goes, is it odd to go back to an eighth for an eighth grader to third grade math and writing. That's where I feel he would have both confidence at first.
So I can talk to that because that's what I do is I work with kids who are struggling a lot of times with writing and math, and I take them back. Third grade math would be probably multiplication facts. And I find a lot of middle schoolers that are struggling. That is where I have to take them back to. There are programs and curriculum that you can choose that is not grade level specific. It's level specific based off of skill. Math UC has both their regular program and an accelerated program, both that has it. There's other programs too. But you know, going with something like that, so it doesn't say third grade all over it.
Right.
Looks like just regular math curriculum would be my recommendation. You know, something that doesn't look babyish. But Math UC is one that I do recommend in that case because it's black and white. It doesn't look like a young curriculum, but you can use those blocks and you make it hands-on, make it visual for the kids. That is really, I lost my train of thought.
I can't read your mind. She'll come back to that later. Lisa had a continuation of that question too. And she said, I'm asking to see if eventually in a co-op situation with peers, he won't be on the same math or reading level. Should I be teaching third and eighth? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it depends on the co-op and the situation. Right. I know different states have different co-ops. Some co-ops are just the extracurricular type stuff. Or science and social studies. Is there an option for him not to do co-op at math so he doesn't feel like he's standing out? Or let him do the eighth grade co-op math with supports with a calculator or whatever in the co-op and then work with him on the third grade level at home. Mm-hmm. I've seen parents do that too. Dawn, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the makeup. We are in a great co-op that we have a specialized coordinator this year for the first time. And we basically work with the parents and work with the teachers and help them get on to make sure they have the supports they need. That may be something that your co-op may provide. The other thing is, math and writing is one of those things that has building foundations. And if you miss the foundations, like my son went to public school for 2 years and there was a lot of behaviors in the classroom, not his behavior specifically, but other children. So like when they're having to move out of the classroom because someone's throwing chairs, so there was weeks where he got he had no formal education because we were just learning to survive. So I brought him back home and I went from the beginning and I caught him up because to me, especially with math, I think the beauty of homeschooling is we homeschool to mastery. So we want to make sure that they have those foundational skills before we move on to the next level. Because you're not going to be able to, you've got to get those foundational skills. So if you need to go back, and then when you go back and he starts doing really great, then you can move a little forward. And then once you have those foundations there, it'll make it easier. And with writing, there's so many ways to make that on a lower level that won't appear that way. Like having them write about something that they really like and then just work with that. There's some foundational things that would be easier with that. But I would say third through eighth is a big area. But I agree with Amy. It's probably some of those foundational things like multiplication and division that affects the kids when they get older.
Yeah. See, they know what these kids learn at different levels. I couldn't tell you anything. I just love this. So Lisa's follow-up was there are other people judging or making fun. And,
I think there was one more comment above that.
Oh, she said, yeah. Okay. I see. I personally don't mind levels. And I know that we our home with him and he doesn't have peers making fun of him. We don't mind if his grade level is an issue unless there are people making fun of him. Exactly. And so I think what Don and Amy are telling you is try not to pick co-op core classes that would really reflect on those weaknesses. Instead, things that he can do at peer level, maybe with some assistance, or ones that wouldn't require any helps at all because they don't require those types of skills. So she said, yes, it's foundational, holes and gaps. Thank you. And we talked about gaps last week too. And I want you to be encouraged to listen into that conversation too.
And when you're filling in holes and gaps, there's nothing wrong with focusing on those holes and gaps and then going quicker through things that he's solid on.
Yeah.
And right. So you might go through more than one level of curriculum in a year because you're just focusing on those areas that are needed.
Mm-hmm. Or you might find games or things that just touch on those holes and gaps. So that makes that part a little bit easier to do. And homeschooling, game schooling is huge. There's a great big Facebook page. Then you can go on there and time telling. They know of all these games and resources that I've never heard of that, you know, makes filling those gaps and holes more fun than just like, oh, here we go again. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
Because a lot of times when the kids have the holes and gaps, it's because they're struggling. So like, what do we do in public school? We would give them 5 more worksheets of the same thing. And that's the definition of insanity. That's right. Not going to work. So finding a different way to teach the same skill that will meet their need.
Yeah, that's great. And that probably answers this question by Leanne. She said, how can I apply errorless learning to learning new math skills?
So like if you're doing multiplication, you would actually give them a card that says 3 times 4 equals 12 and they would just tell it back to you. I'm trying to think of another example of where, you know, you just have you have all the blocks out 3 plus 4 and have the answer over there so they can see the mechanism. Because basically the biggest thing I think with math is that it's so abstract that we need to make it concrete for our learners. And so they need to see what 3 plus 4 is because, I mean, just throwing 7 blocks at somebody doesn't mean anything if they don't understand the whole meaning of behind what 3 plus 4 is. Right. So just making it very airless to the point where they are like, oh, I see, that's easy. Mm-hmm. Fractions would be another way that you could do errorless learning, like getting fraction pieces and building them together and letting them see what they look like. I don't know if you have any more ideas, Amy.
I use a lot of this in teaching my math stuff that I do with my students. So, it's a lot of what you're talking about, those games, helping them make connections. So I have games that, like when we're working on just number sense of what does one mean, it's got the number, it's got the word, it's got it in the 10 frame, and it's got it in a tally marks. And so that way they're connecting those, mm-hmm. those images together. And so games like that, file folder games, things like that, are really great for helping them make those connections. Cause one of the issues that our special needs kids tend to have is generalizing. They know what the number one means, but then they look at it in the word form and they've got no clue, or they see it, you know, in a picture form and they've got no clue, you know, and that's the kids that are counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, instead of saying, oh, that's 5, 6, 7, 8.
Right.
And so being able to see those numbers and those images in their head is going to be really helpful. And those skills are really important. And so those errorless learning skills from the very beginning, using the blocks, using the, like Don said, dice are another way to help that can be used. Mm-hmm. They call them number cubes in math. So we're not gambling in math.
Yes.
So
that's great.
But and when they start to do something that's not the skill you're working on, then you know, stop them and say, hey, let's look at it another way and do it with them. Walk them through it. Mm-hmm. As many times as you need to walk them through it, walk them through it. Because every time you walk them through it, you know, that's worth the problems alongside them. So one of the things I do when my students are first learning is they'll start working on a problem. Well, I give them a head start and then I start working on it too, because I want them to check periodically with what I'm doing and what they're doing and make sure they're on track. Mm-hmm. I also use different colored inks when I'm working problems so they can see each step. And I encourage them to. And then also another great trick is using either turning this lined paper sideways so your columns are lined up, or using graph paper. Mm-hmm. Those are other ways that help with the errorless learning as you're getting into older grades, because a lot of the errors have to do with lining up the numbers.
Exactly. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing we do is I do highlighters for like when I'm teaching a new school and it's a multi-step. So the first step's in pink and the second step is in yellow so that they have a visual to see exactly what step. Oh, okay. So this is first, this is second, especially when you're doing like double digits and multiplication. That's a whole lot of mess right there on that piece of paper. If you're like, well, if, especially if you're dyslexic and you're like, okay, directions are not my friend. So that's what we did a lot of that, or, you know, just creating things that work with your student. And then sometimes the kids cannot stand highlighters. So then we use graph paper, we use whatever. A lot of times when I'm doing a new skill, I do the first 2-3 problems with them and I'm talking them through it the whole time I'm doing it. So I'm doing this, then I'm doing this. Do you see where I got
that
answer?
To verbalize it.
So,
yes.
Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, so what did you see me doing? And so that, you know, so that, that concretes it to them. And then I know it works really great with my daughter. By the second day, she's like, oh, I got this. And she's off with her math work. Because you take the time to invest in the beginning of the work, and then you can let them go.
Right.
I also use, you know, you were talking about multiplication. I will like change the problems so that I'm using very simple multiplication when we're learning the steps. So they're not having to worry about remembering math facts that are harder for them to remember, and the steps. So
right.
I use, you know, 2s, 3s, 5s when we're learning steps so that they can focus on the steps. And then we can slowly, gradually start incorporating a little bit harder math problems, a little bit higher numbers, those more challenging math facts. So that's another way of building errorless learning into it. So they're not having to think about, oh, what is 8 times 7? Because that's like the one that nobody remembers, you know?
Exactly. Oh, that's great. So yeah, Leanne said, yes, my 10-year-old daughter thinks she understands large numbers up to 1,000,000, but she actually can't write them or read them correctly. And then she said, these tips are so helpful. Thank you so much. And we are already halfway through. So I promise you, these ladies have more information that can fill hours. So I really want to encourage you. I'm going to quick put up before we take our break, but they do a monthly webinar that you can take part in. If you go to empoweredhomeschool.org, which is the sister website for SPED Homeschool, that's where you'll find all of our courses and webinars. And so Don and Amy have a monthly Sunday night. Actually, this is why we did it this time, because nobody signed up for their webinar this month. And I really want you to know how valuable these ladies are and why you should be signing up for these webinars to ask them your homeschooling questions on a consistent basis. But you can sign up for their upcoming webinars on there, as well as their mentoring group that they have a coaching group on there as well. So, all right, ladies. So I'm going to give you a little break. And we're going to hear from our sponsor, Bookshark, and then we'll be back. And Kara Sue, we will be getting to your question next, because you're asking about creating an environment within our home that will help our children thrive and learn. And we definitely want to visit that next. So, all right. So here we go. I'm going to pop these ladies off, and we are going to bring up the Bookshark banner, and thank you for your patience with me. So, Joke Shark was the best thing I've done for myself and my kids. That's what Dana said. Tracy says, I definitely regret not starting Book Shark sooner. It's been a great fit for our family. Well, we at Homeschool, Fed Homeschool agree. We've gotten lots of comments from parents who love Book Shark too. So broadcast listener, how can you jump into this Book Shark bandwagon? Well, start by heading to bookshark.com. On the Book Shark website, you can request a free catalog, download samples, and see scope and sequence charts of what's taught at each level. There's also a blog at bookshark.com/blog with hundreds of articles. The Book Shark site also has so much free information about how to teach your kids at home, whether you use Book Shark or not. Another example is they have a free unit study, and you can try out the Book Shark way of literature-based learning at bookshark.com/freebies. And this year's unit study is about volcanoes. So let me share just a couple more quotes with you here. Jill says, we switched to Book Shark Language Arts this year. This was the best decision ever. We love how everything ties together, and I can't tell you how grateful I am for Book Shark. We are looking forward to adding more subjects next year. And Catherine says, pulling my kids out of public school and getting Book Shark's full program saved her sanity. It was one of the best parenting decisions we have made. We're so much happier now versus the kids staring lifelessly at screens all day. The open and go component and high quality literature for science, history, and language art is amazing. So see if Book Shark is a best fit for your family, like these moms, and visit bookshark.com to get that free catalog, and then also add/freebies to get the free unit study. So thank you, Book Shark, for, again, sponsoring this episode of Empowering Homeschool Conversations. And I am going to bring these ladies back up on the screen here. And it looks like we've gotten a couple comments since we've been gone. Creative Minds Homeschooling says, can the next webinar not be at 6 o'clock? Well, why don't you tell us what are some times? If we've got some people on here, why don't you give us some feedback? Because we've been kind of wondering why we haven't had signups. So if there is a better time or day of the week, I know these ladies are busy too. So we can try our best to see that, and we can easily change that. So yes, we were just kind of shooting in the dark. So give us some feedback. We'd love that. And then will there be a link to sign up for both ladies' webinar? I'd love to join. Yes, I can put that in the YouTube description. The link for the website is already in the YouTube description. And if you go on that homepage and down there, they'll be there. But we'll make sure that you get a unique one too, or we'll respond on there later with that information. So, all right. So, let me see here. I don't know what I'm hearing. It's one of your. So we were going to get back to Kara Sue the Dreamer had asked about the physical environment being important too. And I know that was something else that I wanted to touch on, because there's a lot of things about our environment that can either make it very difficult for a child to learn or very helpful. So what do you guys have to share?
Our physical environment here, you know, I've tried several things with my boys. When we first started, I got them the Guyan ball chairs, and that really helped my oldest and getting to focus, and because he couldn't sit for more than about 3 minutes. And so that really helped him because he could wiggle around. Now we've kind of, you know, graduated where sometimes he'll sit in his room, sometimes it's on the couch, sometimes it's at his desk. Sometimes it's at the dining room table. It just kind of varies. And being able to have that flexible seating seems to be important to him depending on the day. You know, we've schooled in the car. We've schooled in the, you know, at doctor's appointments. And so, you know, just, you know, you have to kind of find what works for you. And it may vary from day to day. We, you know, different curriculums that we've tried, you know, some have been successful, some have not. I find that with my oldest, he likes to be independent. So I have to look for things that will kind of teach him in a way that he learns independently. Whereas my youngest wants to be wants me to do the teaching for him. And he's, you know, he's still young. So, you know, that he's still kind of dependent on me. And so, it's, you know, it's just finding that balance of being able to balance how they like to learn. Time of day sometimes was important as far as, you know, working in the morning versus in the evening. I've got one that would rather get it done before breakfast than the other one. Well, you know, he'll get around to it sometime after lunch. So
that's some really good input. So not only is it just a change in the curriculum, but it's a change in location, orientation, as well as time of day. And those are all things to think about. So what do you have to add on to that as far as creating an environment that would help a child who struggles to learn better?
Biggest thing that I remember from being in the public classroom is the less distraction, like having your area organized. We actually have a classroom in our house just because my kids, especially my daughter, needs to see when I'm in this room, it's naughty time. And when we're not in this room, then it's, you know, it's other time. Like she even calls me teacher in the classroom and mom in the house. So for her, that is, yeah, it's kind of funny. It's kind of important for her to see that difference. You know, things like noises, things like temperature, all of those things, can be a huge part, or letting them have a fidget while you're reading, or, you know, when you're reading about something, adding in, having an environment where you can have a video playing so that, you can, you know, reinforce what you're learning. So like we have a TV because I show a lot of videos. So if you think that that's something you're going to do, so just think about like your whole picture, but yes, environment really does matter. And my daughter by the afternoon, she's done. She's tired. She's, you know, so start earlier if you think that that's where your child learns best. Or, you know, sometimes my kids the night before, my other two typical learners are like, can we get a head start on tomorrow? Can we sit down at the table when we have your undivided attention and work on some math before the next day? You know, you just have to make it your own, how it works best for your kiddos.
Yeah. And that's why we're talking about uniqueness. I mean, these ladies are giving you a lot of suggestions, but I want you to be able to say, yes, this will help us, or no, that will not at all. Because it's going to be unique. It's not going to look like everybody else. And that's okay. I mean, school for us starts at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, because I have one 17-year-old now that I'm homeschooling. And I'm not going to drag her out of bed because she's not going to learn. So we might as well do school later. But it hasn't always been that way too. And, you know, these ladies will attest to that as our kids change. And we have to be willing to be flexible with that as well.
Yeah, puberty and hormones, they need more sleep.
Yes, exactly. So true. So it looks like 6 o'clock is dinner time. So we'll have to think of, you know, if the time before that better or time after that. It seems like I think both you ladies have pretty busy Sundays. So maybe a time after that or a different day of the week. If you have a suggestion, Creative Minds Homeschooling for another day of the week that these ladies can think over too and discuss. We can there too, but we'd love the rest of your feedback too. So I know we talked a little bit about this inquisitiveness or lifelong learning. What do you suggest parents do to cultivate that and help their children to be more discovery oriented versus always just the instruction? Because in the short term, we want them to learn the facts. We want to help fill the gaps. But in the long term, we want them to continue learning. So what would you suggest to cultivate that within their learning environment?
I think big part of it is see where they're bending and where their talents and where they're, you know, what they're interested in. But I know Amy has talked about before, her son does really great at building things. And if he can start out at the beginning of the day building things, he does better. So sometimes just giving them the tools, like we're studying geography this year, and I found at the Dollar Tree, like all the different like landmarks around the world that they could build the Legos with, and just like getting that building in, getting that, I have some circuits and we're going to work on those sometimes, just getting that hands-on, we're going to talk about geologists and excavators, this, you know, how people go in and they excavate the ground and whatnot. So we're going to do some excavating and just taking them, if they like to go study about marine biology, take them to places like SeaWorld and see what they, you know, what the next level might be for them. So just field trips are a great way to, for them to see the learning beyond the classroom.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So Amy, do you have anything to add to that?
So, yeah, that was really great. And, you know, let me get my words here. So what we do now, because my son is an independent reader, is I have my things that he has to do for me. And then he gets to fill his time with his interests. And I kind of started doing this last year because he wasn't quite moving into chapter books and I wanted him to move into chapter books. And so I just started buying books that I thought would interest him. And I started out reading to him. And we read like one book together and we started reading the second one. And then I got busy. I didn't have time to get, and he was like, we got to read this book. I was like, well, why don't you try? Why don't you just try? He ended up reading over 100 chapter books last year.
Wow.
And when he would finish a series, I would find something in, you know, something else that he would be interested in. And sometimes he would be like, no, I'm not ready for those. And he wouldn't go to him yet. And I would just leave him out. And within a couple of months, he would come back to him. And so he went from reading very basic chapter books to reading like some pretty hefty chapter books by the end of it. Right. But I just kept putting things in front of him that he was interested in. Or that I thought would interest him. And, or, you know, I'd be like, hey, you know, let's watch this movie together. And it was a movie that I had a book on. And so I could get him interested that way. I found that audiobooks have been a great way to get him interested. Yeah. We listened to The Chronicles of Narnia. We've listened to Story of the World. We listened to that in the car. And all of a sudden I look it over. He's got the whole, you know, the anthology, you know, going through the whole stack of them. And I'm just as reading those. And so when I couldn't get him interested in it other ways, you know, that I used audiobooks, I used videos and things like that to kind of hook him and bring him in. And then
you're hooking him in. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I didn't make rereading required because I knew it was hard for him because we had gone through vision issues for 2 years and his visual tracking was low and there were some other challenges with it. And I was like, yep, it's okay. You know, when you're ready, you're going to do it. And then all of a sudden it just all started to click and he went into it, but it's because I didn't push it. And this, I'm doing the same thing with writing now. You know, I haven't pushed writing, which is really hard for him. We do handwriting and I use building writers from Learning Without Tears because it's independent. He can go through it pretty independently. I can help him if he needs it, but most of the time he can do it independently. And so we're just working on those and it's just starting to click. And he sat down and wrote some things out the other day and I was like, oh, cool. We're using a typing program that teaches spelling and that's been helping him with that spelling because me trying to teach him spelling, we were just butting heads and it wasn't enjoyable for either one of us, even though it was a great program. It was multi-sensory. It was everything that it should have been.
Right.
It wasn't for him.
That's a really good point.
Sometimes you just have to think out of the box. And so this doesn't feel like spelling because he's learning to type, which is something he wanted to do, but it's working on his spelling and his phonics skills at the same time.
Right. Yeah. It's finding that unique twist, and even just I'm pretty sure your younger one is going to learn differently, which always makes it challenging too.
He's my computer hacker. He's hacked my passcode on my phone and my Fire Stick. So, and now I have the brilliant idea to let him learn coding.
Oh yes, that'll help. I think you should take it with him.
That program.
So yeah, you can keep up with him. So I got a question from one of our viewers. Lisa said, "How do you even handle getting motivated when I'm getting a lot of behaviors from my son? I think even though the work is necessary, he doesn't want to do it, or he struggles with neural fatigue, brain fog, and so." I know these play a part, but I'm not requiring much at all. Just a little bit of the basics at lower grade to achieve, suggest, and build confidence. So, motivation.
So, sounds like she's on the right track. I would maybe set a time, either a time or a set amount that he's required to do. Some kids deal better with like a set time, and they know once that time is up, then they are done, whether they get one problem done or five problems done. And then the next time they come back to it, they come back and pick back up where they left off. There's a lot of, a lot can be said for repetition over, quality over quantity.
Mm.
You know, getting 5 minutes in of direct instruction and that really good lesson in is so much more meaningful than sitting for an hour and struggling over it.
Right.
And so I think you're on the right track with what you're doing, Lisa. I think that incorporating more interests. What is he interested in? Does he like to cook? Does he like to build? Does he like, what can you build into what you're doing to help raise that interest? I know like Write Shop has some great writing prompts and some story prompts and things like that are really interesting. And, if physically writing is an issue, then you can always have them do voice to text using Google Docs or using Pages on the iPad.
Right. Yeah.
And so those are always great tools. And there's, it's still writing. It's still getting your thoughts out. It's still getting your story out.
That's a good point. Yeah.
So Dawn?
Like, I know when something is really hard for my daughter, I pick a game, like Connect Four. We do a few problems, then we play the game. Then we do a few problems, then we play the game. So she knows that if I get through this, then I get this. He's older.
Reward-based, but yeah.
Reward-based. And, I don't know what his, level is, but... giving them something that is, encouraging for them, because some kids aren't encouraged by the same thing, or teach the skill through a game if they like games, or, say, hey, we get this done, then what are we working for today? I mean, as adults, we work for paychecks. We work for a lot of things. I get up in the morning because I know I'm going to have my coffee. So, that's my reward for getting up in the morning. So, how our kids are the same. Like, you get this done, then this is, I think, because a lot of times what I notice in the classroom and in my house is when there's a frustration, when there's a skill that's harder, you are going to have behaviors because it's their way of pushing back, because learning hurts sometimes. Our brains, especially when you have special needs. I mean, my daughter will tell you, she's like, I'm just tired. I don't want to do it anymore. My brain hurts. Well, I'm sure that it does, because she has to work much harder than other people do. And I have to, I want to make sure that I acknowledge that and realize that, And so, if coloring a picture is really what she wants to work for, then we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. And, if something is you're doing that's not working, then just change it up in order to make it work. Maybe you fold the page in half and all he sees is half of the page, so it doesn't seem so overwhelming. And you're like, hey, this is all we got to do. And then it's like, sometimes that's just like that breath of fresh air, like, okay, I could get that many done. Or like take a whole page and X out a bunch of them. So they're like, hey, she took off half the page. And then they're like excited because mom took the red pen and marked them all, you know. So just do things that will make them go, hey, okay, this is not so bad. I can make through this.
Mm-hmm. And if he's getting really fatigued, I would look at how you're approaching the course, the material. Is there a way that you could do it that's less fatiguing on him? Mm-hmm. You know, and so is giving the answers verbally easier than writing them out? Is him, maybe it's too much for him to have to think through it and think through the writing process, mm-hmm. to work through the problems. Whereas if he can tell you, write down this, and carry, and he can walk you through the steps and you're actually writing, you mm-hmm. know, sometimes, you know, not having to actually hold the pen and do the writing is enough to alleviate some of that fatigue and that brain fog.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where things like the text, the voice to text and things like that come in handy with writing, because mm-hmm. sometimes it's just the physical act of writing those letters is too challenging for them to get their story out. But when they can do voice to text, they can write these wonderful stories in these wonderful papers, mm-hmm. And then they can work on the physical act of writing through handwriting books. And they've got some great handwriting books out there, including like Knock Knock Jokes and superhero comic stuff. And I mean, just all kinds of cool stuff. Right. So, you know, you can separate out the skills and just focus on one skill.
Hmm.
If working on more than one skill is just fatiguing and exhausting on him.
Yeah. I know when my daughter was first learning how to do math, coming up with how to form the numbers was a lot, was too much for her. So she could tell me that 2 + 2 = 4, then I would put the stamp and then she could just trace the number, because I wasn't really looking at, you know, so just kind of changing that up so that your expectation, what are you looking at? What part of this are you really wanting to achieve? Like a story problem. Sometimes our kid just needed for us to read the story problem, because I'm not grading whether they can read it. I want to know if they know how to work the problem. So also think about what you're focusing on and what your end goal is.
For my son with story problems is actually having to set up the problem. He can tell you what to do, but having to write the numbers where they're legible and mm-hmm. readable. And so a lot of times I will set up, you know, we go through the story problems and I ask him, what are you supposed to do? And I write out the problem for him to solve, because the physical act of writing it was too much. Now I notice he started doing them on his own.
So we've made
some progress.
Yeah. And it's again, back to what you guys started on in the beginning, you know, is making them be successful and what, you know, helps do they need. And it's not like you're doing the work for them. You're just gradually getting them to that place of where they can do it independently. And too often we want them to make that leap. And a lot of curriculum does it, because most kids can, they can, you know, fudge their way through to that point. But when they struggle, that's a big leap.
So. Well, and these are all accommodations that they would have in public school. And I think as parents, sometimes we have higher expectations of ourselves that we feel like it's cheating. It's doing too much for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sorry. Somebody just put up a comment, Peggy, that was really great.
Yes, I know. Made me kind of like giggle too. My son seems allergic to his pencil. They won't try a pen. I don't know. Maybe it's...
Yeah. and that is a great suggestion. You know, I always give my kids, you know, a choice of what implement to use. If it's markers, you know, glitter crayon, you know, pencil, mm-hmm. whatever. Because, you know, some kids don't like the feel of a pencil.
Right. Yeah.
I don't like using yellow pencils.
Yeah.
I don't like using yellow pencils. I'll use a mechanical pencil all day long, but mm-hmm. I do not like using a standard yellow pencil. I don't know where my kids got their sensory issues from.
Uh-huh. And Don and I are laughing because we're saying the same thing in our head.
Exactly. I have no idea.
You have no idea, no. Well, Lisa says, thank you both so much. Such great suggestions. And our hour is up already. Okay, so you guys can now see why I love these ladies. They are just chock full of just joy and fun and so much wisdom. And I just really, really encourage you to connect with them. Amy, I'm going to bring up your website. Amy's website is exceptionalheights.com. And I know the link will be in the feed of the YouTube video as well. And then if you want to take advantage of their mentoring group, that they'll respond to those questions on a daily basis that go into that mentoring group. Or if you want to take part in their monthly webinars, which it looks like we may change the time. I know Creative Homeschooling suggested maybe 7 or 8 o'clock versus 6 o'clock, the dinner hour. So we'll have a chat and put that in. But if you join the parent group, we'll make an announcement about that, or you can just watch those webinars and see how the time changes or if we change a day of the week. So be watching for that. But if you're listening to the podcast, it's empoweredhomeschool.org. If you want to look at that too, and the link again is in the YouTube video. So, thank you so much, ladies. Like I said, we could continue talking for hours. You two have so much to share. And Creative Minds Homeschooling Finch, she said, okay, he's allergic to all writing tools. Oh, so yes, that voice to text might be the best thing for you.
Right. I was thinking paintbrush and paint.
Oh, well, that might work too.
Or finger and salt. Or salt.
Oh,
like a bowl of salt.
I'm still finding beans from our sensory bin.
Okay, so to get involved in this monthly conversation, make sure you check out their webinar and just keep digging in. And really, I do encourage you, bring your curriculum, bring assignments that your kids are working on and say, what is going on here? How do we fix this? You're going to be live with them, not live on, you know, a public place, but on a Zoom meeting where you can see them, they can see you. It'll be a whole group discussion. It'll be a lot of fun. Well, as you can probably tell, you've met them, Don and Amy now, so you know they're a lot of fun. But thank you both for just your time tonight and for sharing and just the hearts you have to mentor women and, well, homeschooling families just with their struggling learners.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
You are welcome. And the more I can push people to you, the less will call me at the office and say, can you? And I'm like, no, I really can't. So don't call the number on our website unless you have a question about the website, because otherwise I'm just going to send you to Don or Amy or one of our other homeschool consultants because they have the answers. I don't. I survived my children. So thank you, ladies, for just inspiring us tonight and for all the wisdom that you had to share. And I want to thank our audience for joining us on this very impromptu episode. We decided last night that we were going to change the date and time because our guest for Tuesday wasn't getting back to me. So I didn't want to have nothing. This has been a lot of fun. And I also want to thank Bookshark for sponsoring this episode. And remember to visit their website at bookshark.com to check out their resources and see if they're a good fit for teaching your struggling learner. So next week, so a week from Tuesday, we're sticking to this same theme. And we're going to be talking about how challenges in creativity increase student success. So we're going to kind of be bridging off some of the things that we've talked about here tonight. So I encourage you to come back for that. And I hope you can join me then. But in the meantime, make sure you stay connected with us on our website at spedhomeschool.com and with our new learning platform and community platform. You can actually join our general community also on empoweredhomeschool.org. And also don't forget to visit Amy's website at
exceptionalheights.com.
Yes, I've got all these things going through my head. and also Amy and Don's webinars. So yeah. So thank you again, ladies. And I'll be talking to them. But definitely check them out and connect with them next month for their webinar. And
hello.
We'll see you back here next week. So bye, everybody.